The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 5, text number 16, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on September 9th, 2007, in Austin, Texas, USA.
So today, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translated and purported by His Divine Grace, Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa. Parivajakacharja, Asta Tarizadashi Srima, Abhaya Chandravindo, Bhaktivedanta Tridandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada, the founder Acharya of ISKCON, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Chapter 5, text number 16. Jnanena tu tada jnanam yesham nashitam atmanah tesham madiccha vajjnanam prakasha yati tatpanam. When, however, one is enlightened with the knowledge by which nescience is destroyed, then his knowledge reveals everything, as the sun lights up everything in the daytime. Purport. Those who have forgotten Krishna must certainly be bewildered, but those who are in Krishna consciousness are not bewildered at all. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Sarvam Jnana Plavena Jnanagni Sarvakamani and Nahi Jnanena Sadrisham. Knowledge is always highly esteemed. And what is that knowledge? Perfect knowledge is achieved when one surrenders unto Krishna, as is said in the 7th chapter, 19th verse, Bohunam Janmanamante Jnanavan Mang Prapajyate. After passing through many, many births, when one perfect in knowledge surrenders unto Krishna, or when one attains Krishna consciousness, then everything is revealed to him as everything is revealed by the sun in the daytime. The living entity is bewildered in so many ways. For instance, when he unceremoniously thinks himself God, he actually falls into the last snare of nescience. If a living entity is God, then how can he become bewildered by nescience? Does God become bewildered by nescience? If so, then nescience, or Satan, is greater than God. Real knowledge can be obtained from a person who is perfect in Krishna consciousness, or stated, who is in perfect Krishna consciousness. Therefore, one has to seek out such a bona fide spiritual master and under him learn what Krishna consciousness is. For Krishna consciousness will certainly drive away all nescience as the sun drives away all darkness. Even though a person may be in full knowledge that he is not this body but is transcendental to the body, he still may not be able to discriminate between the soul and the supersoul. However, he can know everything well if he cares to take shelter of the perfect, bona fide, Krishna conscious spiritual master. One can know God and one's relationship with God only when one actually meets a representative of God. A representative of God never claims that he is God, although he is paid all the respect ordinarily paid to God, because he has knowledge of God. One has to learn the distinction between God and the living entity. Lord Sri Krishna therefore stated in the 2nd chapter, 2.12, that every living being is an individual, and that the Lord is also individual. They were all individuals in the past, they are individuals at present, and they will continue to be individuals in the future, even after liberation. At night, we see everything as one in the darkness. But in day, when the sun is up, we see everything in its real identity. Identity with individuality in spiritual life is real knowledge. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam Shri Guru Namai Vaishnavam Sha Shri Rupam Sagra Jatam Sagana Raghunatan Vidam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitam Cha. So we have recently discussed this book, but it is so wonderful, I thought, let us discuss it again. There are many beautiful aspects to this verse. The first point is this. Right now we're in a bewildered condition. And this material existence is bewildering. Let's face it. It's bewildering. There's no doubt. But when one becomes Krishna conscious, then that knowledge of Krishna and everything in relation with Krishna, it dissipates everything, all the negative things are dissipated. The bewilderment, the confusion, the illusion, the anxieties, all the problems we have in this material world, simply by one stroke, Krishna consciousness. Immediately, just like that sun coming up in the morning, it takes care of everything. All problems solved. So this is really, really a wonderful verse to help us see the way out of our difficulties that we're all having right now at this minute. And the beauty of it is, it doesn't matter what your position may be. One may be healthy, one may be sick, one may be wealthy, one may be poor, one may be famous, infamous, neglected, abused. It doesn't matter what one's position is. Glorified, chastised, whatever one's position. If we simply take shelter of Krishna, as described here, Bahunam Janmanamata, and if we will simply surrender to Krishna, then immediately all problems are solved. So really, we only have one problem, you know. Our only problem is we are not surrendering. That's the only problem we have. Other than that, we have no problem. What we think are our problems, they are not our problem, you see. Not enough money, not enough of this, not enough of that. Poor health, bad, you know, so many things. We may think that are our problems. But actually, these are not our problems. Our only problem is we are not surrendered to Krishna. If this problem can be solved, then all the other problems will evaporate. They will be completely finished in one stroke. So Prabhupada explains how to achieve this position, surrendering to Krishna through the bona fide spiritual master. So what is the meaning of the bona fide spiritual master? Someone who is perfect in Krishna consciousness. Does he have to be Krishna? No. He simply has to know the science of Krishna, sincerely follow the science of Krishna, and purely repeat the teachings of Krishna. Prabhupada quoted this verse that even though irregularly composed, this Bhagavatam is meant for bringing about a revolution. And he gave himself as an example that how there are. There may be so many mistakes in my presentation. I have the original, actually a copy of the original Bhagavatam upstairs in my library. They made an exact copy for those who want to have a desire to collect transcendental artifacts. Actually, I had the original set at one time. But I gave it to my Vartama Pradarshika Guru, Vishnu Janamara. But you'll see there's so many mistakes, spelling mistakes, grammatical. It's full of mistakes, that original Bhagavatam. But Prabhupada's potency was there because he was simply trying to the best of his ability to present Krishna consciousness. Of course, later on he had his English-speaking disciples edit his original manuscripts. And actually, they made so many mistakes also. Not as many as the original, but they also made some mistakes. They took Prabhupada's original thing and they thought, well, I think this, and they, you know, they... So now those have been straightened out in the latest editions. Jayadeva Swami, some people criticize, oh, they're changing Prabhupada's teachings, but no. They're taking the original manuscript and taking the old version and seeing there were so many mistakes. The early editors made many, many mistakes. So they're going in and correcting the mistakes of the editors. They're not to make things in line with what Prabhupada originally gave and the original manuscript, the original dictation tapes. But the ISKCON critics are saying, oh, they're changing Prabhupada's books. You see? They're tampering the words of the Spirit. No, they're undoing the tampering that was done by the early editors who had been LSD hippies 6 months prior to becoming editors. Practically, you know, honestly speaking. And they made some big... An example is, if you look in the original Macmillan Bhagavad Gita, Goraksha, which means cow protection. You know how it was translated? Cattle raising. The duty of the Vaishyas is cattle raising. That's what they do here in Texas for slaughter. You see, cattle raising means slaughter. So the original editors put cattle raising instead of cow protection. And now some disgruntled people who left ISKCON, they say, no, they actually sued that we have to be able to have it in the original form. So the BBT is now presented, they now have the classic Bhagavad Gita. You can buy it from the BBT, in which it says cattle raising instead of cow protection. You can get the classic edition. So we really have to understand what it means to take shelter of the bona fide spiritual master. And who is the bona fide spiritual master? We should not think, well, you know, he made a grammatical mistake, or therefore he's... No. We have to simply see that everything he's doing is meant for bringing about a revolution. That is his qualification, as the Bhagavatam verse explained. It's meant for bringing about a revolution. The bona fide spiritual master, even if he makes some... says something wrong, there's a typo in what he writes, it doesn't matter in the ultimate sense. Just like Prabhupada's original Bhagavatam, so many mistakes, but it didn't matter because we could understand here is the pure devotee. And he's trying to save the whole world from going in down to the lower species of life. So what if there's some grammatical mistake? You see? So the actual qualification of the guru is not that he never makes a typo or he never... The actual qualification is that he is constantly thinking, planning, scheming how to make the whole world Krishna conscious. He's totally absorbed in that. How to make the world Krishna conscious. That is his qualification. So such a person who's fully absorbed in trying to make the world Krishna conscious, you see, he is the bona fide spiritual master. And by taking shelter of such a person, then we become delivered by his mercy. Actually, it's Krishna's mercy coming through that representative. We become delivered from the cycle of birth and death. And all the confusion, the illusion that's there, it goes away. It's like the sun rising in the morning. So the method then, when Krishna says, when one is enlightened with the knowledge of which nations are destroyed, that enlightenment comes about by surrendering to the bona fide spiritual master. Prabhupada surrendered his heart to his guru at the first meeting, even though he wasn't initiated. It was 11 years before he got initiated. But at that very moment, he fully surrendered his heart to his spiritual master. He said, practically, he initiated me. So then Prabhupada explains that actually that's where the relationship begins. When the first time you hear and you realize this is my spiritual master, that's when the relationship actually begins. So we have to hear from the bona fide spiritual master and accept that, yes, here is God's representative. He is giving the knowledge of God. He is giving the connection with God. Let me surrender myself to him. By doing that, then the actual enlightenment comes that drives away all the nescience, all the confusion. And if we're still confused, we're still in a state of nescience. It means we haven't fully surrendered our hearts yet. We're still hovering on the mental platform. Still hovering. Of course, it's not expected that one can immediately fully surrender. It takes time. It's not that if you're sick, you can go to the doctor and, you know, in 5 minutes you're cured. You know, he gives you one pill and it's finished. It is a gradual process of healing, there's no doubt. We simply have to have faith in the doctor and those who are working with the doctor, his staff, and follow the instructions. And by doing that, then everything will become healthy in due course. That's a thing. We have to always be in that mood of feeling completely dependent on Krishna. We shouldn't think that our happiness is based on some improvement of the material situation. That's a big mistake we always tend to make. We think that the improvement of the material situation, that'll bring us happiness. But we may not have that opportunity. We could die at any second. So instead of thinking ahead to some improved material circumstance as our actual happiness, we should think, let me fully put myself under Krishna's lotus feet right now, that my dear Lord, I fully surrender myself to you this very minute. Do with me what you like. As Prabhupada prayed, make me dance, make me dance, make me dance as you like. That is the position of actual happiness. And there is no other position. There is no other position of happiness, save and except for doing that. So we should sober up, we should wise up, and realize that any time this fragile existence of this material body can be finished, and be prepared. Prabhupada was one time flying in Africa, I think South Africa. He was in the front of the plane, and his servant, or his secretary, was in the further back, a few rows back. So they hit some kind of a, what they call a pocket, where the, like a vacuum in the air, where the plane just went, and it went on for a long time. It looked like they were going to die. And then finally it pulled out. My godbrother Pushta Krishna Prabhu explained, it felt like your stomach was in your head. It was so intense. And after it was over, Pushta Krishna Prabhu was very, very shaken by it. And every passenger was very shaken. Everyone on the whole plane was shaken by him. But he went up to see how Prabhupada was doing. And Prabhupada was sitting there calmly, and he's, Prabhupada, how are you doing? And Prabhupada says, we can die at any time. See, he was completely equipoised. And it appeared, you know, it could have been the end. The plane was done going, I don't know if it was like this, it was like that. Yeah, it was level, but it was just like dropping. All of a sudden it just started dropping. That's why they say to leave your seatbelt on in case you hit one of those pockets. If not, you go into the ceiling, you see. You hit your head on the ceiling of the plane. So, Prabhupada, yes, we can die at any time. Completely equipoised. So that's the kind of Krishna consciousness, pure bhakti that we need to cultivate. If we want that to have that knowledge by which nescience is destroyed, that everything becomes clear, there's no more confusion in our life, everything is crystal clear. No more confusion about anything because we see Krishna within everything and everything within Krishna. You see, this is what we are talking about here. I want to give you the pure, total, complete understanding. Now I'm heading out, Mataji and I, once we're heading out again, who knows what may happen. We may never come back. Except to Krishna. So we want to give you the pure understanding. So that if you apply these instructions, you can become perfect. So now I can ask if there's any questions. Yeah.
This is kind of a biblical question, but it applies. At the Garden of Gethsemane, Lord Jesus said, when his disciples fell asleep, he said, the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. What can we do when we sincerely want to do some service, but our body is
Well, the first thing you have to realize is you are not the flesh. You can't blame it on your flesh. See, that can be a cheating thing. Well, I didn't want to fall into my, but you know, the flesh is weak. You know, you can't blame it on the flesh because it's not you. Like saying, well, I'm Krishna conscious, but my shirt isn't, so it's my shirt's fault that I'm not a devotee. You know, I'm going to blame it on my shirt. No. The spirit is you, and the flesh is not you. See, the Christians have a hard time controlling the flesh because they think they are the flesh, and that's the problem. They don't have a complete transcendental understanding of the non-material nature of the self in a practical sense. They may theoretically say, but they are lacking in the practical ability to bring the flesh under control. And they have they eat all sinful things. They have their church barbecue, you know, and they eat all garbage things, sinful, sinful, dirty, nasty things they eat. They have no ability to control their tongue. They become carried away by the tongue. So, the first thing is you have to realize you're not the flesh and you can't blame it on the flesh. You have to be Goswami. Vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udaro pasta vegam, etan vetanyo vishaheta dhira, Saravam abhimam prithivim shishishyat. One who can conquer mind, words, anger, tongue, belly, and genitals is qualified to push forward this Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. So, you must bring these pushing agents under control. They are very demanding. Prabhupada gives example. He says, when nature calls, you have to go to the toilet room. You cannot avoid. That's vegam, urge. But we have to, these pushings, they're called, and also sense, urge or pushings. The pushings are there, mind, words, anger, tongue, belly, and genitals. But we have to be very, very expert at taking control over these pushings and not allowing them to dictate to us. If the tongue wants to eat something, we can tell the tongue, all right, tongue, but you can only take prasadam, you see. If the mind wants to contemplate something, you say, yes, that is all right, mind, but you can only contemplate Krishna conscious things. If the mind wants to become angry, you can say, yes, mind, you can be angry at those who are envious of Krishna and his devotees. So, you have to engage these pushings in a Krishna conscious way. Otherwise, they have to just sit there and be quiet. You see? So in this way, you can bring your vegams under control. That rascal flesh can be subdued. Questions, Mara? Yeah.
If the tongue has some urge or something, it can be controlled by taking prasadam. Like, you can facilitate the tongue's urge by saying you can take another prasadam.
Yeah.
But in that context, it seems like there might be, setting yourself for being uncontrolled still in the realm of taking prasadam. Like, if I eat 20 pakuras just because my tongue says I should eat 20 pakuras, then it seems like I'm still doing something.
Of course, Prabhupada did say, for someone who's completely brand new, Vishnu Dhammaraj asked him, he said, if somebody, the only service they want to do is take prasadam, is that all right? Prabhupada said, as long as he chants Hare Krishna between each bite, then he can just do nothing but take prasadam. Prabhupada's mercy. But, of course, if one, that's for the complete neophyte. But once you make a little advancement, then you realize that if I eat too much, I become sick. And it is not good for my Krishna consciousness. Therefore, I should regulate how much I take. I should yuktahara viharasya yukta cheshasya karmasu yukta svapna vabodasya yogo bhavati dukaha. You see? You want to become free from all misery? All the dukkha? You would like to be free from the misery? Is he? Then Krishna says you should be temperate in your habits of eating, sleeping, working, and recreation. Don't eat too much, don't eat too little, don't sleep too much, don't sleep too little. You have to be a balanced yogi. And then you can mitigate all the pains of the material existence by being a balanced yogi. Questions, Mara? No more questions.
What is a bona fide?
It's your last chance.
What is a bona fide guru? There are so many qualities. The bona fide guru also, sometimes people ask, what is the position? So bona fide guru has to have the position also in the organization.
A bona fide guru has to have a position in an organization. Well, what organization does Veda Vyas belong to?
I'm not talking about that. Oh,
Veda Vyas. Yeah, Veda Vyas. No. I'm not talking about Veda Vyas Priya. I'm talking about he's part of ISKCON. Veda Vyas.
Yeah, I got it.
Vyasadeva, Veda Vyas, same thing. So what organization does he belong to? Does he have a membership in some organization? Does he have a temple, a big temple?
I know, but sometimes there are people who say so.
Huh?
What position do you have? Is he a GBC or is he a...
Is Veda Vyas, is Vyasa Day, Veda Vyasa, GBC man?
I don't
People ask questions. Okay, well, what's your question?
That's my question. How to answer?
How what? How to answer them? If they ask, does the guru have some position?
Does he have to have a position?
A position in the organization. Yes. In our society of ISKCON, the gurus, they are the spiritual leaders of our society. BGBC is administered. They are just like Prabhupada. They're the same, just like the sannyasis. I can tell you, when Prabhupada set up two things at the same time, he had established traveling sannyasis and the GBC. And both of them were very important positions. So the gurus are like that, even if they're not sannyasis. It's the same principle. They are traveling preachers, advanced traveling preachers. We have some gurus who are not sannyasis. There's one brahmachari guru. There's also, you know, those who are married. It's the same principle. Whatever ashram they're in, guru is beyond ashram.
Okay, administrative positions.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have to have an administrative position?
No. Actually, sometimes it is said better they don't. I know when our temple president in Sofia said, Sankarsana Prabhu, whatever you do, don't ever become a GBC. Because he liked the fact that I could spend so much time with devotees and give counseling them and helping them. Even recently when GBC asked me in Europe if I would like to take a managerial role there in Europe, because I'm preaching there so much, and I actually declined his offer. He offered a leading GBC in Europe who, I'm going to 7 countries that are in his zone. So you're thinking maybe Sankarsana Prabhu would like to help relieve some of my managerial burden. Actually, because I have this hearing problem, large meetings hurt my ears. So, and if you're a leader, you have to go attend all these different meetings and sit there for days in meetings after meetings after meetings. And I know they're hard on my ears, so I had to decline on health reasons. A leader, the administrative posts in ISKCON means you have to, now the GBC men, they have to, 3 times a year, they have to fly somewhere and sit through a whole week of meeting. Their own expense also. No one pays their airfare. Their own expense, they have to go 3 times a year to some meetings in India and Italy they had, and New Vrindavan also, 3 times a year they need to get together. It's a lot of work being an administrator in ISKCON. Especially nowadays, they have meetings, 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 meetings. I'd rather just stay focused on preaching and counseling people. To me, that's more enlivening than sitting in long meetings. You know, 8 hours of meetings, 4 days in a row. I'd rather preach, yes. Yeah, what would they say if, what would they do if they went to the ashram, to Sandipani Muni's ashram, where Krishna was a disciple, and they saw, oh my God, Krishna's guru is married. What would they do? Is Krishna must be being misguided. Krishna went to an ashram where the guru is a married man. Krishna, you've made a mistake. What are you doing here? And this actually, according to the Pancharatra, the system is only grihastha gurus can be, only grihastha brahmins can be gurus, no one else. That's stated in Prabhupada's books. The actual system is only grihastha brahmins can initiate disciples, no one else. Do you know that's stated in Prabhupada's books?
According to what?
Huh? There's a literature, it's called the Pancharatra. So in there it is stated that only grihastha brahmins can initiate disciples, no one else can initiate. But then Lord Chaitanya came along And he said, Kiva Vipa Kija Nashi Shudra Kenino Jay Krishna Tattva Pita Sei Guru Hoy. So because of Lord Chaitanya's instruction, it doesn't matter what ashram you're in, if you know the science of Krishna, you can make disciples. So because of Lord Chaitanya, now everyone can initiate. It doesn't matter if you're a brahmachari, a grihastha, a vanaprastha, a sannyasi, anyone, the only qualification is know the science of Krishna. There's no varna qualification that you have to be a grihastha brahman as there was previously. That was the rule. Only grihastha brahmins could initiate. But because of Lord Chaitanya, now it's open for everyone. Anyone who knows the science of Krishna can initiate disciples if their spiritual masters order them to do so. Not on their own, independently, you see. So, next question. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for you, that may be true, ma'am, because your happiness is relative. That's called material happiness. But for those who experience spiritual happiness, there's no necessity of suffering. For material happiness, ma'am, what you're saying is true. You can tell her yes. For material happiness, that's a thing. There's no material happiness unless there's material suffering to compare it with. Because material happiness is simply when the material suffering is diminished. That's so. It's like the example I've given many times, the dunking stool. To punish a person in the old days in America, I think Europe too, they would put him on a dunking stool. They would put him under the water until he was almost drowned, almost dead. Shishi Radhadamara Kija. And when he was practically dead, they would bring him up for a second, for a breath of air, and they'd put him back under. It was a horrible torture. So that is material enjoyment, when you come up for that breath of air. That's all it is. So yes, for material happiness, that's a thing. There's no happiness unless there's suffering. Because your happiness is simply when the suffering is not quite so bad, and that's all. That is your material happiness. But spiritual happiness is of a different nature. It is called ananda. It is simply bliss. That's all. There's no need of any suffering.
At the same time, though, like, I don't know, maybe this just applies to material things, but like the opposite conception of something helps us understand something, like in the sense, like, we understand light because there's darkness, like this contrast, this duality of things. Like, we understand what's good because there's something that's bad. Things like that. Like,
okay, so what's the question?
I guess, like, I don't know how to understand that in that way.
Well, you've already experienced material suffering, have you not? So what is the difficulty? If you think that material suffering is necessary to understand spiritual bliss, well, you've certainly had enough, haven't you? Questions, ma'am?
We always talk about knowledge actually brings about a complete, actually with knowledge we can actually surrender to Krishna completely. But from still after having listening so many times and so many things, we still are not able to completely surrender. So what is it?
You have not heard enough yet. You have to go on hearing. You're not completely convinced. You still have that shadow of doubt lingering there in the heart. So therefore, go on hearing. Therefore, what does Bhagavatam say? Nashta praeshva badreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavad yuttama shloke bhakti. By regularly attending classes on the Srimad Bhagavatam and by rendering service to that person whose life is the Bhagavatam, the person Bhagavatam, great service is done, and one becomes free then of the all that is inauspicious within the heart is practically destroyed almost to nil, and loving service to the Supreme Lord is established as an irrevocable fact. So you have to simply go on hearing, 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 and serving, serving, serving the person Bhagavatam. For those two things, that is Bhagavat Seva. And by that Bhagavat Seva, then it will come gradually, gradually. It's like the sun rising in the eastern horizon. It will gradually manifest by Bhagavat Seva. Questions more? Yeah.
This morning you said that we need to understand that Krishna is my best friend and he would not put me in a position that is not beneficial for me.
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean like Krishna is always putting us in a position that's making conducive for us surrendering to him as soon as possible?
Yes, oh, absolutely.
Of like someone that's very material, well situated, and so comfortable mm-hmm. in their life that they don't want to mm-hmm. like think about spiritual things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Krishna is always doing everything he can to bring everyone back. So they had a very, very strong desire for material sense pleasure. They didn't want to surrender. So Krishna is letting them have what they want, but believe me, they will taste the bitterness of it. They will. It's like the child, the father says, my dear son, you should not smoke cigarettes. They are banned. And the son says, oh, father, my friends all smoke. I really want to try a cigarette. So instead of having the boy sneak off in an alley, you know, and smoke with his schoolmates, the father purchases some cigarettes and lets his son try it right there in the house, you see. So he doesn't just sneak off like some criminal, you know, and smoke his illicit cigarette somewhere. But he can do it. All right, my dear son, you try this. The son tries it. Never again, you see. So Krishna facilitates. All right. You want to enjoy? All right, you try. And see, what is it like? So that is also Krishna's kindness. To help the soul get over that desire. It's all enacted by the Mother Nature.
Yes. So the question is, this one says that it is all modes of material nature and the soul is inactive.
Mm-hmm.
The other day in Bhagavatam class, we were saying that the Mayavadis fall down because the soul is very active.
They fall down because?
Because the spirit soul is active, always active.
Yeah. The nature of the soul is active. Yeah. That's right. So it appears contradictory. We are saying inactive and we are saying active. So what is the proper understanding beyond the apparent contradiction? Of course, there's no contradiction. Simply, the same truth is being seen from different angles of vision. It's like you can see an elephant from the front, from the back, from the right side, from the left side, from underneath, from on top. There's many ways to see an elephant. So in the same way, the Vedic wisdom presents many, many different angles of vision. When it says here, he does not act. This is also confirmed in 3... What is that shloka? 327. Prakrite kriyamanani Gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimudmatma kartaham iti manyate. The bewildered spirit soul considers himself the doer of activities that in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. So this soul is an actor in the sense that he chooses which energy to be conducted by. That is his activity. So that is an active nature of the soul. He has the shakti, he has the empowerment. He is always active in choosing between matter and spirit. And that activity is always there for the soul. Once he is within the material nature, if he's acted choose to be in the material nature, then all of his activities are simply conducted by the material nature. But that does not mean that he is not responsible. Just like a person may, in a drunken stupor, murder someone, but he's still held responsible, even though he doesn't even remember it. He was so intoxicated, he doesn't even remember having killed that person. But yet he must stand trial for murder. Because he chose to be under the influence of alcohol. That was his conscious choice. So the living entity does act to choose which energy to be under. The spiritual energy or the material nature. Material energy. That choice he does make. So the soul is, in that sense, is always active. He's always making that choice between matter and spirit. And in either capacity, of course, he's acting. And within the material nature, he's very active, manipulated. It's manipulated action, but he's active. There's no doubt he's very active. We see people driving here, driving there. You can't say they're not active. But they are not acting in the sense that they are being conducted by the modes of nature, that they have actively chosen to be under that influence. So does that answer your question to some extent?
Yeah, so the activity is essentially desires. Souls desires.
Yes, according to one's desire, one then acts either within the spiritual nature or the material nature. And to become desire to become inactive, completely inert, that is actually artificial. The Mayavadi, he wants to become inactive, completely inactive. He wants to enter a state of non-being, non-existence, or a state of oneness. Actually, the Buddhists, they speak in those terms, non-existence, non-being. The Mayavad, the impersonalist, he wants to merge into a state of pure being, pure existence, where there's no variety. That's the subtle distinction. But it's a very similar thing, the two different types of nirvana. They're very similar to each other. Because in both of them there's no activity. But actually he is acting. He's choosing to be in that state. And because he has always that tendency to choose one state or another, That active nature of choosing which energy to be under will always remain with him. He cannot ever extinguish that. It's impossible. So eventually he will come out of that so-called neutral, you know, that Sayuja Mukti condition, to again act either under the influence of the spiritual nature or the material nature. Question.
In that regard, so if he's acting, if he's chosen to act in a way that puts him under the modes of nature, does that mean he's like a puppet?
Yeah.
Under the control of the modes of nature?
Yes. Actually, our position is puppet. We are puppet of Maya or puppet of Krishna, but we have the free will to choose who will be our puppeteer. That's it. You want to be a puppet of Krishna or a puppet of Maya? Your choice. But the beauty of being Krishna's puppet is you can actually reverse the strings. If you're Krishna's puppet, there's a strings, but you can actually turn Krishna into puppet also. And that's a high level understanding, but actually Krishna is willing to be the puppet, and you let you be the puppeteer also if you agree to be his puppet. Mother Jasoda, Arjuna, examples of them. Krishna is unconquerable. He is a jita, but he becomes jita by his devotee's love. So that's the beauty of it. If you agree to be Krishna's puppet, he'll say, all right, now you've been my dancing under my pulling of the strings. Now, if you like, you pull the strings and I will dance. You see? But we cannot imitate that in our conditioned state. That's on the pure platform. Krishna says, all right, now we have these strings, now you pull and I will dance. Questions, Mara? Yeah.
You did a recording with the devotees there. Can we somehow get a copy of that?
Kirtan? What recording?
In the studio.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know where those are. But yeah, that was in Latvia, in Riga. I think my disciple Ujjav, he likes to do that every time I come, so we'll try to make a point of that. I wasn't real happy with the recordings, but maybe I was being too fussy. The devotees probably would like whatever was there. I was thinking, well, this isn't quite up to the standard that I want. But it was a very ecstatic session, actually. We were packed in a little tiny studio. It was very intense. There was about 25 devotees in a little tiny studio. I have those recordings, I make them available. I think they're somehow I don't have them, but my disciple will have them. Try to get some of those and bring them. I'm sure many devotees would like to hear them. So we'll try to make them available from now on. Anything else? Yeah.
Descending knowledge, I'm wondering. Mm-hmm. It seems that descending knowledge is confirmed by practical application or experiential knowledge.
Yes, that's true.
So it seems like it's reliant almost on the second step.
Means that it actually is confirmed by your own experience. The knowledge descends, and then by that knowledge, as we said today, and everything becomes enlightened, everything becomes visible or seen or known. We hear that Krishna is God by descending knowledge, you see. So we haven't seen Krishna within our memory, at least. Of course, previously we have seen. But we hear from Prabhupada that Krishna is God. And we hear that if we follow this bhakti yoga system, that we will see God, we will meet Him, we will live with Him at every minute. You see, that is descending knowledge. So by actually putting the science into practice and actually meeting God face to face and living with Krishna at every minute, how you can say blind faith? You have scientifically verified the validity of the Vedic wisdom by fully applying it and actually experiencing it at every minute. So that is scientific proof. It is scientifically proven that this process works when you meet Krishna face to face and you can live with Him at every minute.
But if someone follows the formula wrong way, then they cannot experience, so that is
blind. That's why they have to have a bona fide spiritual master. Isn't it? But they don't take proper advantage of instructions.
Yeah.
That's a problem. We see that happen sometimes. They have the bona fide guru. They've gotten everything they need, but they don't follow him. They think, well, I know better. Gurudev is wrong. Guru Maharaj is wrong. I know better. I will do it this way. See, that never works. One has to, If you're sick, you have to take the medicine as the doctor prescribes. And then when you get well, then you know the doctor is bona fide. It's not blind faith. In the beginning, you have to put some intelligent faith that this person is curing other people. And this person is certified by the medical college. Let me try. You have to put some faith and take the medicine. And then by doing that and you become cured, then you know, yes, I know he's cured me. He's bona fide because he's cured me. Yeah.
The context that I was asking this is it said learning from hearing is first class intelligence. Mm. Learning by experience is second class intelligence. So I'm wondering about that. Like, first class intelligence is by hearing alone. Mm. So it seems like that is blind following. You're just hearing alone, but you're not practicing.
So, what's the question?
Is that blind following?
Actually, no, it's not. Blind following means I don't know if the source is bona fide or not, but I will accept it anyway. But when you know the source is bona fide, that is not blind. You understand? Yes.
Some people say parents are God. So is that true?
What does he say?
Some people say parents are God.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true?
Yeah, with a small g, but not a big g. The parents, they are like God. See, the word God means controller, okay? So there are many gods. Your father and mother, they are gods. Your guru is also God, a god for you. One who controls you, he is God. But there is the supreme God, that is Krishna. So it is not that the guru and the mother and father, they are the supreme God. They are not Krishna. But they are small gods, yes. Not the big God. Yeah. Someone is meant to obey the mother, the father, and the guru because they are representatives of God. If the parents are devotees. My parents were not devotees, so when they told me not, they encouraged me not to do this Krishna consciousness, I had to ignore their encouragement. My grandmother said, son, my dear grandson, why don't you be a Baptist minister instead? I mean, what is this Hare Krishna, you know? So even though one normally obeys one's grandmother because she's seen as a representative of God, if she is not a devotee, then you have to ignore. You be polite. You politely ignore. All right, yes. But you ignore. If I ignored my grandmother because she was not a devotee. I was always very polite to her, but I when she told me I should not be a devotee, I should be a Baptist minister, then I ignored her instruction. So in this way, we only follow those who are representing Krishna. If my mother and father and guru are all giving me the teachings of Krishna, then I obey my mother, I obey my father, and I obey my guru. You understand? If they are representing Krishna, then I do accept them as gods. Yeah. My mother, father, and guru. If they are representing Krishna, then I see them as good as God. Because they are representing God to me. But it's not that they are Krishna himself. Only Krishna is Krishna. But those who represent Krishna purely, we give them the same respect as we give to Krishna. Therefore, in Vedic culture, every day the boy, he will bow down at the feet of his mother. Not only does he bow down to Guru, but he also bows down to mother and father. Every day he offers obeisance to his father and mother. At least once. And the Guru, every time he sees a Guru, he does. But mother and father, at least once a day. In the beginning of the day, when he first sees mother and father, he offers his obeisances to mother and father. Do you do them? You should do them. First thing in the morning when you see your mother and father, you should offer your obeisance to them.
But
Okay? Is that all right? Prabhupada told us to do that, actually, Brahmananda, when he got initiated. Prabhupada said, you should offer your obeisances to your mother. Prabhupada said. And they used to do that. Brahmananda and Gargamuni, the mother lived out on Long Island somewhere. They would go from 22nd Avenue, catch the subway, you know, go out to see mother, see mom on the weekend or whatever. And the door would open. They would ring the doorbell and the door would open. The mother would look, there's nobody here. And there they were, bowed down on the sidewalk. So I did that also the first time my parents came. I bowed down. And they came to visit me in the Austin Temple on Dancy Street. I bowed down at their feet. So that's very nice. You can bow down to your mother and father also, because they are God's representatives. They are teaching you how to be a devotee, so you have to bow down to them also. Okay? I'm very good. All right?
Are you going to bow down?
Kirtan, you're being put on the spot now. Mataji's asking, are you going to do it? Okay, anything else? Yes.
Sure. How's that applicable when the parents aren't devotees and they're just...
Well, you have to be politely neglect their rascal instructions.
We should still bow down to them.
Huh?
We should still offer obeisances to the parents.
Well, you don't have to, but... I mean, you could. I mean, Prabhupada told, he didn't say that we all should do that. He just told Brahmananda he should do that. When the mother came for the initiation ceremony, he ordered them to bow down. And then it's interesting that then Prabhupada said, you know, I'm taking care of your sons. I'm maintaining them. And he could give some donation to help. He asked the mother. She said, donation? I've already given you my sons. And Prabhupada said, oh yes, that's all right. So in this way, actually, she offered her sons to Prabhupada. Prabhupada immediately took, yes, that's all right. So you don't have to, but you could. I did it once. I only did it once, I think. But the Prabhupada, it's not a general order that we have to do that. But that's the stated in the Bhagavad Gita, actually. You see in that verse in the Bhagavad Gita? The austerity of the body is to offer respectful obeisance to superiors, like the mother and the father. That's stated in the Bhagavad Gita. It's right, stated by Krishna himself. So they are not devotees. At least you should be very respectful to them. You may have to respectfully... Sometimes argue with them also. What can you do? And they tell you that you're a nonsense by chanting Hare Krishna. But you should always try to be respectful to them, because any parent who can give birth to someone who becomes Krishna conscious is not an ordinary person. They have some special pious activities that qualified them to give birth to a child who took to Krishna consciousness. They have some special position that, frankly, no one in this world has. They're not ordinary people. And anyone who gives birth to someone who becomes a devotee, even if they're the most abominable rakshasa, still, there's something special about them that enabled them to have that, to bring a child into the world who became a devotee. Anything else? Sorry, yes?
In the context of talking to relatives or non-devotees, like, how to not waste time in the sense, like... How not to waste time.
You have to... It's difficult. It's like today at that Christian church, that Christian man wanted to... That Hindu who became a Christian wanted to give us a whole sermon of how he became... why he became a Christian and why we should become Christians too. As we were leaving the program, we had to get back here. So you just come some politely nod and smile, yeah, and then kind of diplomatically, you know, move on down the road. Like them. You have to be an expert diplomat. Learn good diplomatic skills, you know. Yes, yes. So I said, yes, very nice, very nice. Then I said, but follow. And then I walked away. Because they talk all night, they talk big talk about Jesus, but they don't actually follow him. You see, he said, thou shalt not kill, and they're all eating meat. Christ was a very gentle soul, but there are violent people eating, killing the animals and slaughtering them, and, you know, eating their flesh. They're very violent people, these Christian people. Very, very violent people, knowingly or unknowingly. They're committing great acts of violence upon the poor animals. Christ would never condone this, you see. Anything else? Okay. We'll stop here. Raja Virja Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.